You better come on in my kitchen. There's far to be raining her door.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil, and you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick.
And
you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs.
Huh?
And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Mastitos, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening. Welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It is Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Hope you got out to the farmer's market. I always say that, and it's because I always mean it, and because I always do. A lovely time at the Sebastopol Farmer's Market today. Before I introduce our guest, a familiar face from the Farmer's Market, I do want to tell you about a couple of things that are coming up, a couple of events. And in case you don't know it, I write a column, also called Mouthful, that is in the Press Democrat on Thursdays. I know on Fridays it goes onto the Press Democrat Wednesday sometime on Press Democrat on Thursday, their website. Used to run on Thursday, so I still get mixed up. Anyway, Thursday on the website, Friday in print. And it's a roundup of things to do for the next, usually for about the next week. So if something is really important, I also talk a little bit about it here. And I just saw these as I was walking into the studio. I just saw this one as I was walking into the studio. At Cinnabar Theater on Sunday, February 10th, there's going to be La Vie en Rose, A Taste of Paris. It is a French dinner concert. Dinner is at 6 p.m. The concert is at 7 p.m. And you should just go to cinnabartheater.org for information or read my column this coming Friday, because I'm definitely going to be writing about it. And they will be accepting reservations unless they sell out up until February 8th. $35 includes dinner and the concert. And if you want the concert only, it is $15. So if you want to go to Paris, you can't make it, there's an option.
And the group that's playing is Dua Zigibachi.
They're
wonderful.
They're really good.
They are just have an amazing sound for two people.
Yeah, I love them. I've heard them a couple of times. Also coming up a little bit sooner, next Saturday, is Mardi Gras Casino Night. It is a benefit for the Laguna Environmental Center and the programs that they run. And the Laguna de Santa Rosa is one of the treasures of Sonoma County. And it's so great to see the Environmental Center being kicked off. And I was talking to Julie Atwood, an event planner, an amazing event planner. I think she's the best event planner in Northern California. She recently joined the board of the Laguna Center, and they've inherited this event. It had been put on by the Rotary Club of Sebastopol. I'm not sure which one. I think there's more than one. But they weren't able to fund it this year. And somehow the Laguna, who is partnering with the Russian River chapter of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, they are teaming up with the Laguna Foundation. And if you don't know anything about the sisters, all you need to know is that when you hear them doing something, it's guaranteed to be fun and wonderful. and you can dress up as much as you want. So this is a Mardi Gras casino night. There's going to be food, things to drink. The sisters will be in full regalia. And you can, I wrote about that in this week's column, which is still at PressDemocrat.com. Or you can go to LagunaFoundation.org or RRSisters.org and get information. But if you have any inclinations, the sisters are out. They're just so much fun. So there you go. Someone else who's really fun is Dominique Cortara of Dominique Sweets. And she did me the great favor of saying yes, she'd come on the show very late. I didn't get to her until today. So welcome.
Hello.
I'm really appreciative. But we talk so much every week anyway. Mm-hmm. And I thought, why don't we just do it on the radio?
Yeah, talk about what's going on.
Yeah, the first thing I want to do is clarify for people, because not everyone knows yet. What is a macaron and what is a macaroon?
A macaron français is a little sandwich cookie made with almonds. There's no coconut in a French macaroon. So
ground almonds, though, right?
Ground almonds. Uh-huh. It's very delicate, and it's a tricky thing. It has a little crispy, crunchy top, and then there's a chewy middle. And then the center, it's a sandwich cookie, so it's filled with a creamy filling with either salted caramel or bittersweet chocolate or rose. And that's to be creamy. And not too sweet, because the cookie is a little sweet. So you have the different textures, crunchy, chewy, creamy, and you have your sweet and your not sweet. And that's the philosophy of a good macaroon, or macaron. And a macaroon, an American macaroon, is made with coconut. And it's usually coconut and some kind of corn syrup or egg white or something. And those are really yummy, too. I like
those.
They're
just a whole different thing.
But it's a different ball of wax. It's a blob.
Yeah.
Or it's a
yeah. And do we know, I mean, suddenly macarons are getting more and more popular.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hearing more about them. There's a book out. I think it came out last year. Mm-hmm. There's other people selling them.
There's a lot.
Why have we sort of reached this watershed with macaron?
I think perhaps because they've reached an ultra-glam status in Paris and France, and they've started to become more popular in France, and more people travel, and when they come back, that's what I did. I came back, and we didn't have any, and so I just had to start making them.
Uh-huh.
So they used to only be in Paris, pretty much, because it's a Parisian-style macaron. And now they're all over the place. They're even at farmers markets in Provence in France now.
Uh-huh.
But they're delicious and everybody loves them. And there's some, since they're so popular now, there's some that really aren't that great.
Of course, that would inevitably happen.
Yeah, and then there's some, and also La Durée, which is the famous macaroon house, one of the famous ones in Paris, opened a shop in Manhattan.
Oh, I don't know.
And
that.
Yeah, so that's the big. It's the big buzz. And they're so pretty, and you could...
They are so pretty.
And they're light, and they're
They seem to me
tasty.
To be a relative, a cousin of meringue.
Mm-hmm, they
Is
are.
That right? Okay, yeah. So there's a lot of egg white involved in the sandwich part.
In the cookie part,
mm-hmm, yes.
There is. And most macaron are made with ground almonds, but in different parts of France, like 700 years ago, they developed their own style. So some regions made them with only hazelnuts, and some, you know, with almonds, some with, you know, it's different nuts. So the coconut in our American macaroon, it's kind of related.
Okay, there's that resonance.
And I think they started kind of to develop over in Paris because they have a Passover macaron in Paris that's coconut and an Italian meringue, and it's not a filled cookie.
Oh.
So that's interesting. And they started becoming sandwich cookies like in the mid-1800s at La Durée. The guy got an idea to put ganache in between two of them, and ta-da.
There you go.
Voila, I should say.
Now, you were in the Chronicle several weeks ago, a few months ago.
Yes, I was.
About your macaron wedding cake. You have to talk about
that. Yes, it was very exciting. Susan and Ralph... I guess I can say who got married.
Ralph Tingle, yes. Ralph was one of Mouthful's
early guests long time ago when we were still on Thursdays at noon broadcasting out of a little tiny construction trailer.
Well, they're very sweet people and they're very nice. And Susan was so, she just wanted something really yummy and she fell in love with the macaron and we got together. Originally, she wanted a tower. And then we decided to, let's just make a macaron wedding cake. And so the layers were made out of gigantic macarons. So the bottom layer was a 12-inch diameter with three or four macarons with fillings in between each macaron. So there was vanilla and salted caramel on the first layer. Then there was lemon and vanilla, and then there was chocolate and vanilla, and there was a bride macaron and a groom macaron on the top so that they didn't have to cut it so they could
just take them off. Yeah.
And then there was lots of little macaroons all cascading around it.
It was lovely.
Oh, thank you. It was fun to make. It was a little scary, but it was really fun. Was
now, nice. Does are they are is the macaron vulnerable to things like humidity and that sort of thing?
It is. It's very
vulnerable. I wondered
about
that, yeah.
Because when she told me the wedding was going to be at Hog Island Oyster, I...
Fog.
Yeah.
They melt in moisture.
I imagine them being battered by fog and wind and salt spray. But it was fine. It was a beautiful day. Uh-huh. But they are very subject to humidity, and when you make them on a humid day, it gets kind of tricky. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that, you know... They're just kind of persnickety, you know. In the beginning, I had beginner's luck, and I thought, I've got this down. I could do it. But every time you think you have it mastered, they kind of come back and teach you a lesson.
Yeah. How long have you been doing it now?
Since 2008.
Okay, yeah. And you quit a corporate job, went to France, and studied baking. Is that right?
Yes, I did. One of my life's dreams was to be fluent in French, and... And I also wanted to do something with food, and I was, you know, going to go to the CIA in New York, and then I realized I could go to the Cordon Bleu in Paris and speak French and make pastries. I did pastry there, and I also did cuisine, and I did wine studies, which was really fun. But I kind of went crazy there for a couple of years, but it was really nice. It's fun living in Paris.
Yeah. That's something I've always wanted to do as well. And the most I've done so far is I've lived in Paris for 3 weeks.
That's nice.
But it's not enough.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near enough. So now you sell most of your macarons and a lot of other baked goods that we're going to talk about at farmers markets.
I do. I sell the majority of them at farmers markets. I used to ship the macarons, but they're very delicate and they crush easily. Yeah. So I don't do that anymore. But in the summer, I have 4 markets a week. And now in the winter, I have 2. I do the Santa Rosa Saturday market at the Wells Fargo Center. And I do the Sebastopol market, which is very fun. And parties, you know, things like that.
Yeah, private parties, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you brought some things, and I can smell them over here, but I can't see them.
I did. I brought some savory things because next Sunday is the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You know, why don't we take a little musical break, and then we're going to come, and for the first time in Mouthful 17 years, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl.
Dared. The bats have left.
Ah, that is the band Nouvelle Vague. Great little friend. They do a lot of cover tunes, lounge versions of cover tunes, and a lot in French. I just said, do you know them, Nouvelle Vague?
I've heard of them, but I don't know them. But it would be fun to sit in a cafe drinking, you know, smoking a cigarette with a blue light on, listening to them.
Yes, drinking absinthe.
Yes.
Okay, so you brought some savory things.
I did. I brought a mushroom pasty, and I brought some pisseladière. Mm. And Mike can have one if he likes anchovies.
So, now, pasty, I think of as English, not French. So talk to me about pasties.
It is English.
Okay, good. I'm not.
But I have branched out.
Yes.
And I also make pies, American pies. Yes. And there's a British couple that would come to the market in Sebastopol, and he always asked me if I would make pasties. And I said, I don't know how to make English food. So he said, it's easy. Just, you know, I'll be your test subject. So he was my test subject, and he says that I do it correctly. Mm-hmm. So the seasoning I use inside is salt. I try not to use any garlic or anything too exciting, but I can't help myself with the mushroom ones.
Sure.
I put a little bit of garlic in the spinach. I put garlic. But the meat pasties are good. I use Williams Ranch lamb.
Oh, they have the best lamb.
And yeah, and the potatoes come from the market, and the carrots and the onions come from the market. It's very simple. It's mostly root vegetables, I think, is one of the rules of pasty making, mm-hmm. if you want to have an authentic one. And then I put it in my pie dough, and I roll it all up, and I brush it with cream and stick it in the oven, and they're very good for breakfast.
Oh, they're really good. I had a lamb pasty. I guess it was at the Renaissance.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm going to help you this next year to make steak and kidney pasties.
Yes.
Yes, and I've been working on it. I actually ran a steak and kidney pie recipe in mm-hmm. the seasonal pantry a couple of weeks ago.
Oh,
and
I missed that one.
And I have a source for lamb kidney.
Okay, because I've always been afraid of kidney.
Oh, it's really good.
Good.
All you have to do is like cook it once, taste it once. It's really, mm-hmm. really good.
All right.
And very simple. Really, you don't have to do much to it mm-hmm. at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the beauties of English cooking nowadays. Since the First World War, they got real simple, I guess.
Yeah. Yes, and we're all going to go home from Mouthful and watch Downton Abbey. So
that's right. It's fitting, Sunday night.
It's fitting to talk a bit about English food.
Yeah.
So, and then tell us about pisseladière. I have a terrible time. I can speak French, and I have a terrible time with this word.
It's pisseladière. Yeah,
pisseladière.
So the pizza is like pizza.
Yeah.
Ladière is just ladière. A flourish, I suppose.
Pisseladière.
But pisseladières are a specialty of southern France, Nice, down there.
Yeah.
On the coast, and the Romans are the ones that started making them forever ago. See, all these recipes are very ancient that I use. Mm-hmm. I figure they knew what they were talking about. They have all of their combinations really good, but it's a caramelized onion tart, basically. And they have Niçoise olives and Herbe de Provence and anchovies on there on puff pastry.
And hungry, Mike?
And you could put Parmesan cheese on if you want to, but I kind of like to... I leave the cheese off.
Mm-hmm.
Just a personal preference.
And then sometime in the summer you make them with thinly sliced tomatoes, right?
I make the galettes with tomatoes.
Okay. Oh, and it's so good.
Caramelized onion and tomato galettes.
Yeah.
Yes, those are nice.
Yeah.
So I'm making savory stuff now mm-hmm. because... because I get hungry, too, in the morning.
Yeah. And out of it, you know, I'm thrilled you're making savory stuff because that's where my preferences are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just good. Make both people happy. And plus, people who eat sweets have to eat savories, too. You can't eat all sweets.
That's true. It's nice. And I have to branch out. And I dream of having a little shop one day. So, you know, I'm having my mini shop at every market.
Right. So anything in store, anything on the horizon as far as the shop goes?
I've decided that I need to have a partner.
Oh.
I mean, that's the big decision that I've been struggling along, thinking I could figure it all out by myself, but I can't. So I'm going to, that, you know, just the decision of that.
Sure.
Then I can go forward doing that. But no, nothing that I can really share right now.
Okay. So the very, very early stages.
Yes.
But we are coming up on this big game.
That's right.
And you're into it. And you told me this afternoon about, because we were talking about Super Bowl food. And I actually have a story coming out in the Press Democrat. I have a feature story on Super Bowl food. We'll be in the Wednesday food section. You told me about something truly remarkable.
The cheese ball?
Yes, the cheese ball. But not your typical cheese ball.
It's not a round cheese ball. It's a football-shaped cheese ball that my nephew and I got one Super Bowl. It wasn't Eli Manning, but his brother, Peyton Manning, was in the Super Bowl, and Kraft put out this cute little brochure, you know, how they used to do in the old days of TV. But it's this a whole little pamphlet of football watching foods, and he really wanted to have this cheese ball, and it's a lot of Kraft products. So it's cream cheese, Parmesan cheese, there's some scallions in there, some cayenne pepper, and you soften it and you make it into the shape of a football.
You mix it all together.
You mix it all together after the cheese is soft. Shape it like a football. Then you coat it with bacon bits, but we made our own bacon bits. We, you know, have some standards.
Crushed bacon, yes.
Although we like cheese whiz on crackers also during football. So, and then you get little pimentos, or you could roast your own red bell peppers to make the laces for the football.
Oh, wow.
And the cheese football does bring on good luck. It's like a superstition in our family now that when we really want a certain team to win, we make a cheese ball. And if they're faltering, we start eating this snack and they start doing better miraculously.
People have things like that with both, I guess, with sports in general.
I think
they have to watch it in a certain place. They have to eat things. They can't change their underwear. I don't know. It's weird stuff.
Well, I'm not washing my 49ers shirt until, you know, after the Super Bowl, because they've won the last times that I've worn it.
And so you just have to keep the good juju.
I do. It's kind of embarrassing, but it's because it's such an emotional thing. You know, in previous years, we haven't really made it to the playoffs. And so, you know, you didn't have to get scared. There was, you know, you didn't have to worry about anything. All the other people were, you know, going through this. But now when it's your team, because I really want us to win. And so these things that work, if they were winning the last time you did something, well, you figure if you do it again, they'll win again. Oh. Hence the t-shirt and the places where you watch it,
yes.
The place on the couch where you sit, you know, things like that.
Wow.
That's my nephew.
Well, the thing that's interesting to me about it this year, and actually I should say the first time I ever really had anything to do with the Super Bowl other than ignoring it, and like even being in, a bar with my boyfriend and still ignoring it and hating it when everybody screams really loud. 3 years ago, I turned it on because it was in New Orleans and New Orleans was playing.
That was a good
one. And it was really nice to see New Orleans come back after Katrina. But by coincidence, that was the day that my little dog Joey came to live with me.
Oh.
And all of a sudden it was like, because I've had cats forever. I'm a cat person. Suddenly it's like, I have football on and I have a dog. Oh, I'm having a major identity crisis. I have no idea who I am.
Did you start drinking Coors Light or
no.
anything?
No, I did not go that far. But this year I think it's interesting. It's back in New Orleans.
It's New Orleans.
And I don't
again.
Know why.
I'm not sure why either. I'm surprised, but I'm happy because that's a nice...
New Orleans is wonderful. Anything to do with New Orleans is wonderful. So that makes it interesting. And I don't know if it's bad to say anything about Baltimore that is good, but it's named after a poem. It's named after the Raven.
The Ravens, yeah.
And how I have a cat named Poe. And the Raven is one of my favorite poems in the world. And I have to tell people, and maybe Mike is going to be able to find this on the computer because I was going to print it out and I forgot. I stumbled across a poem called The End of the Raven by Edgar Allan Poe's cat.
Oh.
And it is hilarious. It is so, I was actually going to practice it and read it on the air, and I forgot to print it out. And anyway, so we've got Baltimore, which is a cool place. I mean, Baltimore, we have Baltimore to thank for Homicide: Life on the Street, for Edgar Allan Poe. And now there's on Facebook, there's all these conversations about Blue Crab and Dungeness Crab. And people who are from the Chesapeake Bay area said, Blue Crab has it all over Dungeness Crab. And people from San Francisco saying, you're crazy. Yeah. Dungeness Crab is so much better. Well, and then we have San Francisco and Richard Braddock, I mean, so many great poets. So we just have like three, really poetic places.
We do.
Involved in the Super Bowl. And I'm going to tell a story that will be on my blog tomorrow or the next day. John Gaines, wonderful guy who was bartender at the Tradewinds forever, forever and ever and ever, until Jerry Green died and whoever inherited it took over and changed things a little bit. So I don't think John's at the Tradewinds anymore. But he's a very good cook. He's a very good writer. He's a great bartender. Very sort of deadpan sense of humor. So I reached out to him to see what ideas he had. And he said, because these three really poetic cities, he said, turn off TV, turn down the sound during
who's playing
halftime and have a poetry slam. And he suggested these very masculine poems. I'm going to write about this in my column. And then he had all these ideas for food as well, which were pretty interesting.
That's great.
So
I think,
Did you find it?
I did find it.
There you go.
You want me to read it?
It's long. I don't know if... I have to make sure that it's... We'll take a musical break. I'll look at it and see if we can maybe get it printed. So anyway...
Well, it's okay to say, you know, good things about the Ravens, just as long as, you know, the... it's okay. You can do that. Just
Because a lot of people, it seems, a lot of people here have roots in Baltimore. Like Nancy Pelosi... She's from Baltimore, but I mean, she's certainly for the 49ers, but she's from, she grew up in the Baltimore area. Mark Stark, who has, you know, Stark's Steakhouse and five other restaurants in Sonoma County. He's from the Baltimore area. And Ted Krimi, who is back living, I think, in New Jersey. He was Mouthful's second engineer, just a treasure. I adore Ted. He's from Baltimore, and he was on his... Facebook page, there was a lot of back and forth about blue versus Dungeness.
Well, that would be a good luck food for the 49ers, is to eat Dungeness crab. My sister has a whole NFL cookbook with foods for each team to eat.
Really? Wow.
Some of them take forever. You have to start the day ahead preparing. So we've cut it down to the ones that we can deal with, like Dungeness crab, crab cakes. What else do we do? Chili, for some reason. I don't know.
Chili is 49ers. Chili is, but chili is an absolute Super Bowl food, no matter where you are or what team you're for. Guacamole, chili, chicken wings, sandwiches, big sandwiches. Let's see what else.
Bratwurst.
Pizza.
Dennis Dunn is making chicken wings for his Super Bowl.
How's he doing? And Dennis Dunn, we should say, is Franco Dunn of One World Sausage. His brother, and he sells the sausages at the farmer's market. And I had actually, I had a sandwich for dinner before I came to Mouthful.
Oh, the chorizo?
I cut a chorizo in half and just fried it. Then I had a piece of sliced sourdough from Nightingale Bakery. And I put some mayonnaise with hot sauce. Folded that sucker in half. Was
That's
really good.
Tasty.
Really good.
I'd eat that at the Super Bowl watching.
Okay, a little more music and then more talk.
Once I had a love and it was a curse, soon turned out her heart of glass. Seemed like the real thing, only to find much mistrust, love gone behind. Once I had a love and it was divine, soon found out I was losing my mind.
This mouthful, we are talking with Dominique Katara, Dominique Sweets, and I think we should taste something.
Okay.
I think we should cut a piece saladier in half.
All right. I'll cut it diagonally.
Joey's so staring with big eyes.
Yeah. I'm going to break it.
And how much does, this is about 4 inches square, 5 inches square? 5 inches square?
Yeah.
How much does one of these cost?
I'm not very precise for a pastry chef.
That's about...
Those are $3, and they're on puff pastry.
That's a really good deal.
Yeah.
It's a really good deal.
And it's the anchovies make it for me, but for the Super Bowl, I'm going to be making some without anchovies, too, so that, you know, not everybody likes an anchovy. Here's a napkin.
Maybe a crab.
That would be sacrilegious.
What did you say?
Sorry, I said maybe crab.
Oh, crab. Oh, no, you can't do that. How do you prepare crab for the Super Bowl?
I just like steamed crab. I like to crack it.
Do you like it hot or cold?
It depends. It depends on how much time and focus I have for the crab.
Because I'm a chilled crab girl.
Yeah.
I like it chilled.
I've had it at Portuguese Crab Feeds hot, and it's delicious. There's garlic and things in there. But you still have to crack it, which is kind of messy, but it tastes really good.
I bought a nice 2-pounder from Dave Lego at the farmer's market today.
Yeah, he's going to have crab for a while, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said there were 10 crab feeds this weekend. Just in Sonoma County. 10 crab feeds.
This is really good. Yet. Thank you. I should have some.
A lot of people
I'm smelling it all morning.
Don't necessarily know what puff pastry is.
Oh, puff pastry it's a simple pastry, but it's folded a lot, and that's what gives it its puff. So you start out with a blob of dough, and a
and in the dough
piece of flour.
Water, salt, flour, butter.
Water, salt, flour, and a little bit of butter. Mm-hmm. And that's your de trompe. And then you have a large block of butter that you put on the big piece of dough, and then you fold the dough over it, and then you roll it out, and you fold it in thirds, and that's your first turn. And I just do puff pastry to four turns now.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a lot of work. I don't have a sheeter. I do it by hand.
That's a lot of work.
That's why... Yeah, we've got some muscles now.
Yeah. So you do four turns.
You roll it, you turn it, you let it rest. You roll it, you turn it, you let it rest. And then you can do all kinds of fun things with it. You can, you know, you can make little tarts like this. You can make palmiers, which
you make palmiers.
Uh-huh, they're little cookies. And for those, the last turn, you use sugar instead of flour on your work surface. So it caramelizes and makes them really crunchy when
they're delicious. They're really delicious.
Thanks. I think it's the butter. It's the clover butter.
It's the butter.
Because nowadays, a lot of puff pastry that you have isn't used. It's not 100% butter.
What do they do? What do they use?
Just different kinds of fats.
Shortening.
Yeah.
Vegetable.
And a lot of it is done with a sheeter. Not a lot of it's done by hand anymore.
Yeah.
So, what else? You can make little things for crab. You can make a little vol-au-vent and put crab inside for like a little hors d'oeuvre. But it's fun. And, oh, I'm going to make cheese straws also for Super Bowl Sunday.
And that's really with cheese straws. You get to the four turns, and then don't you just cut them, twist them, and put cheese on them?
Uh-huh. I lay it out. I brush it with egg white, and then I sprinkle it with cheese. And then I cut it, and then I'm going to twist them so that they're, you know, pretty.
Yes. So where are you going to be watching the Super Bowl?
I'm going to be watching at my mother's, a good luck place.
It's a good luck place, okay. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have lamb and potatoes. So we're going to have like a big dinner, and we're going to have nibbly things in the beginning. And lamb's good for the Super Bowl because you just put it in the oven and you don't have to do anything, you know, because you need to be watching the action.
Now, does that mean that you're going to have to skip the Sebastopol Farmers Market?
No, I'm going to be at the Farmers Market in Sebastopol.
Uh-huh.
All of us are, most of us are, I think, and we're... I was talking with Paula, and, you know, it could be your Super Bowl headquarters. You can get your lamb there. You can get cheese, your bread. You could get – there's beautiful carrots now. You can make carrot sticks.
There are so many good carrots right now. Two places, Laguna Farms. And one of the reasons I think carrots are so good right now is because of the freeze. And of root vegetables and kales and cabbages and all that, they all sweeten up when there's a freeze.
Yeah, the collards for sure are really good right now.
And they – carrots from Laguna Farms, and then I don't know what variety they are that Armstrong Valley's growing.
He has a lot of it. He was telling me the varieties.
They're so good.
That's what I'm putting in my lamb pasties.
They're huge.
They're sweet.
They're sweet, and they've got that, I don't even know how to describe it. They've got this very pristine, delicate texture. And the sweetness, they're so good. They're big and ugly, you know, and just so good.
But they taste so fresh. There's the white ones, the yellow ones. I got some purple ones that have an orange center, which are really fun.
Yeah.
And the orange ones, you know, you get kind of spoiled. But
yeah. I actually like, of his, I like the white and the yellow best because they're delicate and really sweet. And there's just something... so crystalline or something on the palate.
I can just sit and eat them raw too. I went and got some and just ate them raw this morning too.
I can eat carrots for breakfast.
They're good.
Yeah. So let's cut your meat pie.
Oh, okay.
I want to see what
this is the mushroom pie today.
Oh, it's mushroom pie.
Because I ran out of my lamb, but I figured I need to try the mushroom one myself. So here, you can just stick in. I'll give Mike some.
Here you go. Let's Here's some for Mike.
Oh, here you can have. That's okay. All right, it's okay. Anyhow, this has potatoes and mushrooms, and I sautéed the mushrooms a little bit with some garlic before I put it in.
Very nice.
Side. And the trick with this is you need to cut your potatoes a certain size so that they're cooked by the time.
They have to be cooked all the way through.
Exactly. And you don't put any vents on it so that all the juice stays on the inside. But yeah, I'm going to have lamb, I'm going to have spinach, and I'm going to have mushroom pasties. And somebody asked, why don't you have lamb, spinach, and mushroom mixed together? I'm like, well, that's not fun. I have spinach separate and lamb. Uh-huh. I have spinach and mushroom separate from each other because there's a lady that comes and she's allergic to mushrooms. And I just can't deal with making more than three different kinds of pasties in one morning. Sure. So,
sure. Do you have a lot of people wanting things but having lots of food restrictions that make them very ask you lots of questions?
I do. And a lot of it is the gluten.
Yeah.
And the French macaroons are gluten-free. And also I make a chocolate cake that's gluten-free. But for the most part, I'm a gluten pusher.
Yeah. And macarons are by definition gluten. It's like olive oil doesn't have any cholesterol in it because it never did.
Right.
And same with macarons, right? They
exactly.
just don't come with gluten.
Naturally gluten-free.
Yeah.
They never have gluten. It's not a correction of a previous recipe. It's yeah. their almonds aren't replacing anything. And that's why they're so beautiful. I mean, that's how
yeah.
they were meant to be. And I haven't really taken the time to figure out a gluten-free pie crust. But I guess that's my niche. Butter, sugar, and flour.
Yeah. yeah, and I have found if I mention anything that has to do with a nutritional niche,
mm-hmm.
Gluten-free, anything, you pick it. Mm-hmm. If I mention that in a newspaper column, I get a deluge of responses from emails from people demanding that I do more.
Oh, yeah.
And being very, very picky, either telling me what I've done wrong
mm-hmm.
or demanding that I go all the way in, that I completely embrace their philosophy. So I've sort of backed off.
Yeah.
It's like I have my niche.
Mm-hmm.
My niche is, you know,
yeah,
cook what's at hand and mm-hmm. kind of deal with the difficulties you have yourself. I mean, because I can't deal with each of those.
Exactly. And there's Cosmic Cookie at the market, and they make lots
they have
of
gluten-free all kinds of
gluten-free stuff.
Yeah.
And I try to make things that are different from everybody else's, and I have my things that I make. And I make crust well. And
I can testify to that right this very minute. What do you think of this, Mike?
Oh, it's wonderful. You must brush salt water or something on top. There's a burst of salt.
Yeah.
I brush it with cream and then I sprinkle it with some salt.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Thank you. But I figure I'm going to stay with something that I do well. And mm-hmm. there's other people that are doing that. I do try to source all my produce and fruit from the farmers markets and have organic and wholesome ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to kill anybody, you know, but so I do have gluten-free requests for gluten-free pies and everything, and I haven't taken that step to figure out how to make the crust yeah. yet.
I mean, that's really a specialty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're going to perfect that, it seems like you should just go off in that direction.
Yeah, there definitely is a big market for it.
Yeah.
For sure. But my idea of I've always wanted to make traditional French pastries because I grew up eating really delicious pastries, you know, Napoleons, which mm-hmm. aren't called Napoleons in France, and eclairs and cream puffs. And we didn't have them every single day. We didn't have a ton of them. We had them for, you know, on the weekend, sure. a Sunday dessert or something mm-hmm. like that. And I think that if you eat them in moderation, it's fine. Mm-hmm. They're nice little treats.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did a show here. Oh, gosh, when was it? It's been a few months. There's a company called Community Grains,
mm-hmm.
and they're working with local, by local I mean California, farmers and millers, and they're
yes.
growing some antique grains. They brought grain back from Italy,
mm-hmm.
but they're working with farmers who have mills on their property,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing old-style milling. And Craig Ponsford, who was the founding baker for Artisan Breads.
Okay.
He's really involved, and he's doing a lot of recipe development. And they're also working with some scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some thought, without going into this too much, that all of this gluten intolerance...
It's very puzzling.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's coming from what's happened in the last, say, 40 to 50 years,
mm-hmm.
where we're not using whole grains anymore. And even like whole wheat flour that you just buy off the shelf is not whole grain flour. It's right. been milled separate, stuff added back in.
Mm-hmm.
And so Craig gave me a loaf of bread that I took, a loaf of some sort of whole grain, not whole wheat, whole grain walnut bread. And I took it. I was leaving for New Orleans. I took it with me.
Mm-hmm.
He gave it to me on the 18th of December. And we were still having toast on New Year's Day.
Wow.
And it was delicious and fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things they're working on is comparing the components of whole grain.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that maybe this reaction to gluten has occurred because of we're eating so many out of balance, unnatural foods.
Right. I think it all, you know, when we started industrializing all of the wheat growing
yeah.
and GMO stuff that we, you know, contaminated wheat because yeah. wheat used to be a main staple. It's an ancient grain.
Yeah.
And I've also heard a lot about grains because I've been thinking, you know, here we are, we have, because I like to source things locally. I can get my butter, I can, mm-hmm. you know, but flour and grains are difficult to find really locally.
Mm-hmm.
I use Central Milling's flour. That's, mm-hmm. you know, they're pretty local to me, but they have beautiful flour. But I've also heard that there's, I think, Lou Preston, I really don't remember the details, but there's a group of people in Sonoma
yes,
County
Lou
that are working
yes.
on having our grain, being sustainable that way and having
yeah.
our own grain source.
Yes. And I wouldn't be surprised if Craig Ponsford was involved in that, at least, even if it's just as someone to help
mm-hmm.
advise, because
mm-hmm. yeah.
he's so all over this.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's tell people again when. So you're at the farmer's market on. Are you on Wednesday and Saturday or just Saturday?
Just Saturdays.
Okay, that's a Santa Rosa original.
Yes, at Wells Fargo from 8:30 to 1. And on Sundays in Sebastopol in the plaza from. I think the market starts
10
at 10.
10 to 1:30. People show up earlier.
Very early, because it was a beautiful day. There was lots of people today, but there's going to be extra savory treats and cookie platters. I'm making football-shaped cookies even.
Really?
And micro pies, like little mini banana creams and mini lemon
meringues.
Are you
using those little...
I am.
Yes, I got Dominique's. I was at this restaurant supply... Chinese restaurant supply store on Clement Street that is just Disneyland for people like me. There were these little tiny, if you make a circle with your pointer finger and your thumb, that's about how big around these little tin pie pans were. And I bought some and I thought, I have no use for these. And I said, I know, I'll give them to Dominique. Can't wait to see. So you're doing special things.
I'm doing special things for the Super Bowl. And also, somebody asked me about my king cakes. I'm going to start making Mardi Gras king cakes.
That's right.
Too.
We've got Mardi Gras coming up.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a baby inside.
There is. What? A little plastic
baby that's bakeable. It won't kill you unless you get it. They're too big to swallow, so
okay.
Don't worry about it. And a paper crown and some beads come with the cake.
Oh, that is so
they're very
great.
Fun. Yeah.
It's going to be a great... I've been reading just different things that from New Orleans. I think it's going to be a great Mardi Gras this year. I'm really sorry. I'm going to go next year.
Uh-huh.
I've never been.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah, yeah, especially the week up,
leading
the run up to it.
Mm-hmm. You got to get your fun in.
If people want to order special things from you, how do they get a hold? Should they go through your website?
Yes, they can go through my website. It's DominiqueSweets.com, or they can email me at Dominique@DominiqueSweets.com.
And I'll post links to your website
okay.
on Mouthful's Facebook page.
Yeah.
We're up to 485 likes. I know we're going to get to 500
oh,
before
good.
Too long.
I think I've liked you. I'm sure I have.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have. But I'll put a link to
okay.
to your website up there.
Yeah.
And then we've got about 7 minutes before the end of Mouthful. And I wasn't sure what we were going to do. I had been going to end the show with Christopher Walken's reading of Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven.
That would be
because
amazing.
It's truly extraordinary. But it's about 8.5 minutes long, and I just decided, well, maybe I won't do
yeah.
that. I do it at least once a year, either on Mouthful or a music show. But I came across something, And I think I just want you to sit back. I think I have to read it.
Okay, I'm going to eat the mushroom pasty while you do that. I'll move my microphone out of the way.
It's not going to take the full rest of the time, but I think in honor of the 49ers, while still at the same time honoring Edgar Allan Poe and the Raven, what we have here is The End of the Raven by Edgar Allan Poe's cat. And I will give it my best shot. On a night quite unenchanting, when the rain was downward slanting, I wakened to the ranting of the man I catch mice for. Tipsy and a bit unshaven, in a tone I found quite craven, Poe was talking to a raven perched above the chamber door. "Raven's very tasty," I thought, as I tiptoed o'er the floor. "There is nothing I like more." Soft upon the rug I treaded, calm and careful as I headed towards the roost atop that dreaded bust of palace I deplore. While the bard and birdie chattered, I made sure that nothing clattered, creaked or snapped or fell or shattered as I crossed the corridor. For his house is crammed with trinkets, curios and weird decor, bric-a-brac and junk galore. Still the raven never fluttered, standing stock still as he uttered in a voice that shrieked and sputtered his 2 cents worth, nevermore. While this dirge the bird brain kept up, oh, so silently I crept up, then I crouched and quickly leapt up, pouncing on the feathered boar. Soon he was a heap of plumage and a little blood and gore, only this and not much more. "Oh," my pickled poet cried out, "Pussycat, it's time I dried out. Never sat I in my hideout talking to a bird before. How I wallowed in self-pity while my gallant, valiant kitty put an end to that damn ditty. Then I heard him start to snore. Back atop the door I clambered, eyed the statue I abhor, jumped, and smashed it on the floor." And that was by Edgar Allan Poe's cat, otherwise known, I believe, possibly as Bert Christensen. No, it's not Bert Christensen.
It's Henry Beard's Poetry for Cats.
Henry Beard's Poetry for Cats. I mean, I don't know. I can recite most of The Raven by heart. I love that poem, but what a wonderful answer. So, we are almost out of time. Next week, even though it is the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. will the game be over by mouthful?
I don't know. I think it starts at 5 o'clock, and the Super Bowls are, you know, they've got that long poetry reading time in the middle.
Well, and I think what we did last year, I think we kept checking the game, because mouthful now has a tradition on Super Bowl Sunday. It's mm-hmm. so weird. There's a group of people who come out from the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. Oh. And they're always out here for about 10 days. Mm-hmm. They always have lunch at Ann Vercelli's house. Ann Vercelli brings them up, uh-huh. and we do a tasting of a particular category of their wines.
On
Super Bowl Sunday. So this year, because of the 49ers, Annie has moved lunch from 11:30 to 10:30. So it's brunch because people want to watch the game. But we're still doing and this time we've never done this before. I think we did whites. Then we did red. I mean, once we just did all different things the mm-hmm. first year. Then we did whites. Then we did reds. And now we're going to do sparkling wines.
Ooh.
So that's next Sunday. Okay. And we'll keep you posted on the game if you care.
Go Niners!
thanks so much. This has been really fun. Yes, we're going to go out with a little bit of Mardi Gras music. And have a great week. Meet me back here next Sunday on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
Uh-oh, you know what it's about time to do? We're going to New
according to a Mardi Gras.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.